ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Kevin Agandi, it's good to talk to you. We're on a text chain that is wildly depressing. We're on a Sixers chat in which we just give doomsday theories about everything.
You know, it's therapeutic for me.
Kevin Agandi hosts the 6 p.m. Sports Center and is also the first Indian American anchor on a national sports network.
I'm on multiple chats, I'm sure, like you are, especially if you're a fan of Philadelphia sports. And it is therapeutic when you could just go off and then just feel normal afterwards. And you put your phone down after 10 minutes of just ranting and raving about why'd they do this? Why are we here? I can't believe this. And then you move on.
It is worth mentioning, we talk about two things generally via text, Kevin. One is the Sixers, God help us all. And the other, I would say, is a category known as Asian stuff. And so here we are. We're here to talk about a topic that is at the Venn diagram, the center of it, for both of those topics. And we do it in part because nominally it's May. It is Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And I want to start here by just acknowledging that this month for us is both special and I think worth unpacking a bit, right? Because, like, the idea of being Indian American, South Asian, right? Like, how would you describe the particular place that South Asians occupy in the grand coalition that we're celebrating this month?
If you talk in general, like just in the entire space of this country and being South Asian, we have currency. And that currency is not something monetary. It's currency on the idea of work ethic and coming here to be honest, assimilate and make sure that you put your head down, you work hard every day, and you make your parents proud, right? But Pablo, I think all of us who are Asian American, there's always a strike of balance. And quite often the question is, where do we fit in? How do we fit in? You alluded to us having a text chain because there are certain things that you and I experience that my cousins or your cousins don't experience because we're in the media field, right?
Yes. And
there's not a lot of us that look like us in this space.
And not just any media field, Kevin. We're in sports media.
Yes.
And look, as much as there is a sort of like growing list, a list that may or may not be kept on my computer privately of every person of Asian descent in sports, the list is relatively, look, it's not as exhaustive as some of the other lists out there if we're going to power rank all of this, Kevin. And so, yeah, we wind up being representatives to all of sports on behalf of a coalition of literally, I suppose, billions of people, which is kind of too much as it is also a cool thing that we get to inadvertently engage in.
It's overwhelming, Pablo, if you actually think about it, right? And Pablo, I think this is something that a lot of us experience in the sports angle, and I'm glad you brought that up in the sports media. A lot of us have to overwork, not only just get the job, but then prove ourselves at the job every single day, more than I think people that we are with who don't look like us, because we don't get the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, no, we're a nerd to be stuffed into a locker pretty much on site.
100%.
And our credibility, it's in question on site, basically. That is how it's always felt to me. And that credibility gets questioned not just by the public, by the way. Sometimes, right, it's our own families, it's our own parents even, who just don't see sports as this viable, sensible career path.
And Pablo, even though I told my parents this is what I wanted to do, and they were like, okay, all right, since the age of 14, I want to be on SportsCenter at ESPN. I want to be the first Indian American. It was like, all right. And then when I got to ESPN 10 years into my career, my mom was still talking about taking the LSAT.
Same.
Because she had no idea about this career. So it was always a constant fight in convincing them.
Yeah, because on some level, right, risk aversion is part of an immigrant's. Man. Well, actually, it's funny, right? Because it is risk-seeking for those who immigrated here. And then once you get here, you want the kids to take a path that seems to ensure some level of risk aversion. some structure, some pathway, right? They took the risk so we didn't have to go and try and roll the dice trying to cosplay as a SportsCenter anchor, you maniac. Why would you ever think that that's better than going to law school?
It's all about stability because no one that looks like us is on TV. So you're crazy because no one's going to take you on TV. This is a path that they couldn't envision. But you're right. Like, they took the biggest risk. My dad came to America with less than $5 in his pocket, left my mom and my brother in India to have this new life for our family. And that was the biggest risk in the world.
You could make the case that the very concept of an Asian American is a ridiculously oversimplified idea. I mean, we're talking about roughly 20 million people from more than 20 different countries and just as many disparate cultures, all of whom are supposed to fit under this heading that's meant to represent the most populous continent on the entire planet. But if anything does unite us, if there is anything we do definitively share, it is certain experiences in this country, certain experiences that pretty much any Asian American working in sports can tell you about. Whether you're a TV gas bag or an NBA point guard or Sachin Gupta, the guy who was running the Minnesota Timberwolves until yesterday. So today, Kevin DeGondi tells us the story of the first Indian American to ever lead an NBA franchise and what that story, which is still unfolding, says about the rest of us. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, May 24th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Kevin DeGondi, the timing of this episode is crazy. And I want to be fully transparent about this here because a couple of weeks ago, you got to interview a guy who is very rarely interviewed, right? Sachin Gupta. And Sachin Gupta, at the time, was the interim president of basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And this is a guy that both of us have found particularly fascinating for many reasons for a long time. But just the latest reason, it turns out, is that yesterday, Monday, the T-Wolves announced that they had just paid a king's ransom for a new permanent president of basketball ops, Tim Connelly, a highly respected executive who had been running the Denver Nuggets, to replace Sachin. And yes, reportedly the T-Wolves do want Sachin Gupta to work for Tim Connelly. They say he's highly valued. I have no doubt, by the way, that other teams are going to be in the market for his services. And Sachin, by the way, I'm sure is horrified to know that the timing for his big interview with us has sort of timed out like this. He was kind of terrified to do this at all in the first place. But the timing to me, man, is also kind of weirdly perfect now because this whole story is about what not just a sports person looks like, but what a leader in sports looks like. And in the NBA, no GM had ever looked like Sachin Gupta. So when did he first come across your radar?
Well, Sachin Gupta, when I first heard about him, it was, you know, our connection to the Sixers. And there was a guy that's working with Sam Hinkie and laying down this foundation of what are we doing with basketball? We're going to lose games. And I've got to trust everybody. And when it comes to losing games at this rate to get lottery picks, that's the first time I heard of Sachin. And then when you look back at his history, I was stunned because we started at ESPN at the same time in 2006. So it was like, oh my this guy's living my dream.
No, it's crazy. As much as we have lived a dream, Kevin, Sachin Gupta is quietly one of the most fascinating people in sports and sports media, because he has always been, I've always known him as the guy behind the guy. He was there in Houston. He was sort of the brain behind so many of the things that Daryl Morey got so much credit for. And in Philly with the Sixers, Sam Hinkie has said that all of his good trades are Sachin Gupta's ideas. He is the guy behind the guy, the legendary figure who, by the way, happens to be, how tall is he? Like 5'5"-ish?
5'6"-ish,
if you're maybe measuring him in socks, like at the NBA Combine, right?
And it's how he did it, right? Pablo, like, he didn't have dreams of becoming a GM, a guy that's making trades. He went to MIT, and he was studying computer science. And for him to take these steps, and then eventually his dream job was to get to ESPN and take a look at, how do you break down computer science effectively for some sports-related content? And then that leads to, I think, a groundbreaking tool that changed the shape of how we talk about yes. the NBA. And you know what that is.
We are talking about the father of the trade machine. And if that term does not already stir in your soul something deep inside, then you just don't have the NBA addiction that so many of us are still nursing. But that guy who created the trade machine for ESPN.com then goes on to become a guy in NBA front offices. I have so many questions about what you learned when you talked to Sachin. But I understand that you started your conversation with him with perhaps the most important question of all. What did you ask him?
I asked him, how do you pronounce your name?
It's trickier than you may assume, even for those of us on these text chains.
And here's the thing, Pablo, the reason why is not because I didn't know how to pronounce it. It's because I know the assimilation here in America. It's sometimes your name takes a different path to how it was originally introduced to you inside your home.
I grew up in a middle-class town where there wasn't a whole lot of diversity. There weren't a whole lot of other Indians in my school. Sachin was how my name was always pronounced. And I went with it. Pretty much all my friends from growing up, some of my closest friends in the world, all still refer to me as Sachin. And my nickname became Sach.
I found it interesting, his experience, because I've had cousins and uncles change their name. Mahesh turns into a Manny. Ajay turns into AJ. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that we are adjusting outside when we walk around to make sure, especially growing up in this country, to make sure we fit in at school because no one else looks like us. So we got to make sure we fit in. And Sachin went through that experience.
Yeah, names are so, I mean, look, I'm Pablo Torre. Like, I am a walking advertisement for colonialism for people who are still wondering how it is that an Asian guy is named Pablo Torre. All of these things are worth unpacking, both for pronunciation's sake. I would have gone with Sachin until I listened to your interview with Sachin, which is an important thing for me to know. But I'm curious also, like, you describe your own path to sports. What was Sachin's path like? Like, I know his family came here in the 70s, right? He and his sister were born here, but what was his sort of entryway into this business?
They grew up in the Boston area, and sports wasn't important in his household, but it was important the minute he walked outside, right? And he's playing with his buddies and his friends, and that's where he fell in love with sports.
In our household, I was definitely the first to really fall in love with sports. My parents probably didn't really understand why I was collecting baseball cards and football cards and basketball cards. They probably didn't really understand where it came from.
That was kind of like his gateway on what he wanted to do. The dream was always ESPN, but it was never to change the course of teams.
As it turned out, after my junior year of college, just looking for, thinking about internships, I really wanted to try to combine my passion for sports with what I was studying in computer science. And I was really fortunate enough to find an opportunity with ESPN.com.
And so the trade machine, Kevin, right? If this is the only thing that Sachin Gupta ever does, ever makes, it's enough to me. but it's also clearly something that he created and in so doing wound up being changed himself as a result.
Yeah, and what's amazing about him is he won't take any credit. Session will take no credit about this concept. He was talking to Chris Ramsey, who worked at ESPN, the son of Dr. Jack, back in 2006 on this idea of trade scenarios.
It was an idea that came from Chris, and we just spitballed it. And, you know, he thought it would be a fun idea, and I thought it was a neat idea. And so I sort of took this on the side, you know, working sort of nights and weekends.
Listen, you and I have done this. We love the NBA. In any sport growing up, we're making trades constantly.
All of
You're
the
constantly
time.
Trying to.
This
right?
is this
You're,
is my therapy, is coming up yes. with fake trades.
Exactly. But we can make any trade we want, but behind that, it has to make sense when you talk about salaries and understanding that concept. So not only is he putting together the code of the trade machine, but he has to do a deep dive in the CBA and understanding the economics and the numbers that make sense with salary caps and what things fit in.
Just a blast to come up with something new and to also have to dive into the CBA and really understand all the rules of how trades work in the NBA, which is a level or two beyond what I understood just as a fan.
And when you're doing all of that, he's so deep into it, it comes together with this concept, with the code he builds, with the trade machine, that it works, and it works immediately, and it's a big hit, and then it takes off with Bill Simmons. Are you still blown away that here we are 16 years later talking about the trade machine and people can play that role as GM?
16 years later. Wow. That's wild. You just aged me. But no, for sure. I absolutely did not expect, like I said, this was sort of a side project, and to see the popularity that it's gained has been wild. People still know me as the trade machine guy, and that always shocks me.
It was the perfect combination of a guy that who's living his dream at ESPN and then finding out that there are more dreams to be had off of this dream, and that is the trade machine.
Yes, I mean, look, the CBA, for people who don't understand, this is a 500 or so page tome. It is arcane. It is its own code. Literally speaking, it must be deciphered. It's the thing that regulates how much anybody can be paid for how long. It's the Bible of NBA contracts. And it is the thing that you have to ground any hypothetical trade in for it to be a plausibly hypothetical trade, Kevin. And so that screen, when you go to ESPN.com and you put in the trades and you put in, I'm going to pick these players on one side of the ledger and on the other side, here's who I want. Will this work? And you get that miraculous yes. The trade machine has approved this.
That feeling, though, too, successful. Like that feeling is so rewarding.
Yes.
When you put something together.
And it is thanks to, the work of this dude who then, ends up meeting an actual NBA GM, because the NBA GMs are like, wait a minute. This toy you built clearly requires a level of rigor that will be very useful in our job.
And it's fascinating how he then eventually met Daryl Morey.
I actually met him at MIT. Daryl was speaking on campus one day, and I drove up from Bristol and went to see him speak, and he was talking about the basically Moneyball in basketball and in the type of analytics work that he was doing with the Celtics. And you know, immediately, I knew that was exactly what I wanted to do, and exchanged contact information with Daryl afterwards and kept in touch, and was sort of angling my way for a job with him with the Celtics.
So he's falling and stumbling into some of the great minds in the sport off of the concept of the trade machine. But he also, Pablo, what is fascinating about this is he's prepared too. When you study the CBA, that helps you in every other conversation moving forward when we're seeing the analytic boom come here in the early 2000s.
soon thereafter, he got the GM job with the Houston Rockets. And one of the first positions that he posted was for a software engineer to start his analytics team in Houston. And I applied for the job there and was really fortunate to be able to get that opportunity to work with Daryl and Sam Hinkie was there as well.
I got to say, though, I am bummed a bit that Sachin no longer needs the trade machine, as he explained
to you. How about
that? Yeah, I feel a little abandoned by that. I feel a little abandoned. There's actually a better trade machine that he just does secretly, that he makes secretly for his own purposes now.
And I actually wanted to know what they were, but I think he was going to give up, you know, trade information if he was going to give us that concept of what the Timberwolves are using right now.
When was the last time you actually put a trade into the trade machine?
we have our own internal tools that we use in vendors that we use. So I actually haven't used our old trade machine in a while, but I might take a look at it after this.
I was like, there's something better than the trade machine, because 16 years later, when he built this thing, it still stands effectively. And it's the one tool that I think is a common bond for anybody that follows the league.
It's the thing that the nerds gave to the world that every jock clearly is also very grateful for. And so, okay, listen, because the path that Sachin takes, right? Because he goes from the Rockets to Stanford Business School to get an MBA, because of course he does. And he wants to further his MBA career off of that. And then he goes to the Sixers, and in Philly, your beloved city of Philadelphia, Kevin, is where I really do cross paths with Sachin for the first time in earnest. And he's there working for Sam Hinkie. And again, it's an inflammatory experiment they've embarked upon. I'm not going to relitigate the process here, but I will simply remark upon how visually funny it admittedly was when Sachin Gupta is the number two guy for an NBA basketball team, and he's walking into rooms full of dudes who, let's be very blunt here, look literally nothing like him at all.
Absolutely.
Being short in an industry with very, very tall human beings and not having the playing experience, which is common in the industry. So I do think those things combined made me feel like I had a higher hill to climb and just a few more obstacles to overcome to really be taken seriously. But, you know, for the most part, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to work with really tremendous people who I think really saw through those things.
When he walks into a room, that unassuming look can neutralize a lot of people, because he doesn't walk in, hey, look at me. There is no ego with Sachin. But one of the things that I thought he does a great job in any conversation, and we've heard that at every level now, is that he's a listener. He just listens to people.
I'm very much a listener, first and foremost. It's not strategic. That's just who I am. But I think it's been very effective for me. And, you know, I think being a listener makes others feel comfortable knowing that they're being heard and that I'm trying to understand their viewpoint and incorporate it into my own.
That built the trust with the scouts, where he just sat in there and said, I know my limitations. He doesn't even have to say that. He just listens to everybody in the room. And I think when you do something like that, you have the ability to listen to people and not try to tell everybody how much you know. That's when you learn the most. And then you build trust.
There's so much that I don't understand that those guys do, whether it's from their playing experience or just from the years and years and years of scouting and the pattern matching that they've developed. So I just, knowing what I don't know and wanting to learn and understand, I think people respect that.
This is not about his ego. This is about what's best for the team. And when you can sell that in a room to whoever it is, no matter who they are, that you want to win collectively as a team, I think that buy-in changes how everybody talks to you. And Sachin has that ability to do that in every conversation. I learned that talking to him.
Coming up, how a guy who is nothing like Anthony Edwards and Patrick Beverley manages Anthony Edwards and Patrick Beverley.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Kevin, I was reading this essay by Ben Falk, this guy who was a former executive with both the Trailblazers and then the Sixers, who now runs his own excellent website, cleaningtheglass.com. And Ben writes about Sachin, quote, that he listens more than he talks. He's not a manipulator playing political games or figuring out how to get people to fall in line. He's genuine and transparent. But rather than cut against his ability to lead, those traits enable it, end quote. And this struck me, man, as this sort of unforgettable trait for your boss, for your leader to have. Because across all of cinema and television, in every locker room we've ever imagined, there is always this very specific picture of what that guy, that leader, is supposed to be like. You're supposed to have this big attention-drawing presence. And that, in full disclosure, is why I'm kind of bummed that the T-Wolves just hired Tim Connelly to be Sachin's boss, to be that guy, because he is definitely more of the established leader guy, Tim Connelly is. And they hired him even though Sachin just proved he could do that same exact job, overseeing, by the way, an incredible season in Minnesota with a roster, it must be noted here, full of guys who do not share his personality traits.
No, not when you're starting with your crown jewel, and that is Anthony Edwards, who's the best quote in the league.
By far.
Hands in and night out.
You were the best player on your team.
Is that the net? Now we talking.
You could hit the ball.
But I was 4th, 5th hitter. You know what that mean.
Clean up. Yeah.
Straight clean up on aisle 3. Come get it.
Sounds like you're just an athlete.
Yeah.
Okay, ping pong, baseball, football, basketball.
Tennis, swimming, lacrosse, whatever you need me to play, I'm going to go do it. If it's some money on the line, I'm going to go do it.
I think when you looked at that draft specifically where Edwards came in and was the number one pick, a lot of people were like, he's a physical freak, but I'm not sure his game translates. We saw the jump in year 2.
The outlet pass to Beasley puts it up for Edwards. How great was that?
He's putting everything together, I think, at a pace that not many people expected. And then you have the combination of what Cat can do and how Cat has embraced shooting from the outside.
Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns, who is, still evolving as a player into somebody who has all of this all-NBA promise.
Towns, what a move by Cat! And an even better finish!
And then, Pablo, do you throw in the mix the defensive agitator who's on ESPN this week. That is Patrick Beverly, Pat Beverly, who has a career in media eventually.
No doubt.
Do guys in the NBA go to sleep early the night before playing the Phoenix Suns? Hell no. I'm going to stake 44.
over there in Phoenix. I'm going to have me a nice little wine, probably sweat it out, and the pregame shoot around and get ready for Chris Paul. Steph Curry, I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock. Mom, don't call me. My girl, don't call me. I'm locked in right now.
Pat Beverly brings a certain attitude that I think that team desperately needs. It's not about just young talent. It's, hey, how do you grind? We need to have a bunch of guys that can grind and call each other out and play on the defensive side, hustle basketball. And I thought Sachin made a fantastic decision on putting this all together.
And this was not the easiest job to inherit, by the way. Like, not only was the team losing, as it has for so long as one of the worst franchises in all of American sports, but his previous boss, Gerson Rosas, oversaw what was termed a broadly dysfunctional workplace and got fired. And then you add in the fact that there is this new ownership group in place and a new coach, also Chris Finch, who nobody really knew, who also wound up stumping for Sachin to keep the job that Tim Connelly ultimately got. And all of this is coming together faster and better than anyone expected. Which is why, Kevin, Sachin Gupta somehow winds up with a first-place vote in the executive of the year ballot.
When I brought that up to him, he was beyond shocked.
That's just outrageous. It's just not real. Just could not be real. I hadn't really thought about that I did receive a vote for executive of the year. I still can't believe that. Clearly, I have a good friend in the league somewhere who gave me that vote.
But Kevin, as we get closer to the end here, the word representation has been so overused to the point where that too feels like a cliche that I actually want to unpack as well, because as much as it's a goal that lots of corporations talk about, it's also a real practical thing that you talked to Sachin about experiencing yourself.
Yeah, that's the one thing that stands out about this. Why I was so excited to actually talk to Sachin, because he's living the dream of a lot of young kids, not just South Asian descent or Asian American descent. There are a lot of young kids that all feel like they could be a GM.
Anybody with a fantasy team, Kevin.
It feels like it'd be a GM, right?
They can do exactly what Sachin Gupta can do.
And when you see somebody on TV or you read a story or you see something on the internet and you see somebody in that position that looks like you, it actually gives you the idea that, wait, the dream is potentially attainable. One of the most impactful stories in my career was, you know, when I was a few years into ESPN, I was at a journalism convention at Columbia. And this young lady who was of South Asian descent, Indian, she's a writer at Vanity Fair. And she stopped me and said, my younger brother wants to become a sports broadcaster, but my parents won't let him. My mom wants him to become a doctor. And she's like, well, you changed the course of my brother's entire life, because my mom kept on telling him, no one looks like you on TV. He gets up from the kitchen table, goes in the living room, pops on the TV. I pop on, last name comes up, Nagandhi. And he looks at his mom and goes, look, he looks like us. At that moment, the mom said, oh, I had no idea. And she goes, let's start looking at schools if this is what you want to do. I brought that up to Sachin. Like, there are so many young people that can see you now and envision you now. And that's changing how we view things.
Hearing stories like that makes it really, really meaningful to give hope for others to know that whatever barriers seem to exist, that you can get past those. To whatever degree I play some role in that, where someone can see that a short Indian American who hasn't played basketball at a high level can have this job. You know, if that gives hope to others, anyone who is trying to do something where someone who looks like them hasn't done it before, that means a lot.
Oh, you know, and Kevin, like, let's be honest about this too, right? Like, because Asian American athletes are not just falling off of trees, right? The idea of what's our path into sports, what's our path into affecting the thing that we love, it is the path of a Sachin Gupta.
100%. And I think that you're going to see more and more of that. And here's the other thing. When you have people in that position of power, they can open up the door to so many other people who are sitting there waiting for the opportunity.
All of which is to say, Kevin, that you've described a lot of pressure on you. I mean, don't choke, man. Don't mess this up.
I've stumbled upon so many college kids that are Indian American and just say, I watch you every night. Just thank you. It makes me very proud, beam with pride. And then I always tell them, make sure you're minoring in something else. You got to have a backup plan.
And I do want to be real about this here, Kevin, because we ourselves have considered our own backup plans, at least early on, right? We have considered drastic measures in an attempt to do the thing that is so eternally elusive to so many Asian Americans, especially in sports, which is to just fit in.
I remember my third year at Temple, one of my mentors was just like, you know, you may need to change your last name. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, look at the way you look. You can do a lot of things. And being Indian descent, there was nobody that looked like me. And he was like, you could look like you're Hispanic and Mediterranean, Italian. So for like 2 weeks, I tackled this idea of changing my last name. My parents came from India to give us this amazing life. And now I'm going to go to them and say, hey, I'm embarking on a career in TV. I'm going to change our last name. And I didn't have the courage to even talk to them about this. And then one day, again, 2 weeks after this conversation, my mom asks me to come downstairs and sit on the couch. And our family doesn't have those type of conversations. And she's like, can you sit down? Me and your father have been doing a lot of thinking. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, well, you know, for you to be successful on TV, we need to change your last name. I said, what? And she's like, yeah, we need to change your last name. So me and your dad have been talking about it. We have a list of all these last names that may work for you.
Wait. Your parents came to you with a list of alternate names that would not be, to be very clear here also, not their name.
Not their name, not Indian, let me tell you that. And it just shows you the sacrifices that my parents, who didn't understand that why I was doing this TV thing, and now they understood that, hey, you're in this you know, field, and you're in America, so let's get a little bit more American.
How American are we talking, Kevin Negandhi?
Oh, the one, first off, my jaw dropped. I was in disbelief. I became defensive. and the first name that was on this list was O'Connell.
Yes.
And I said, wait a second, what? Yes. Kevin O'Connell? Mom, you understand I'm not Irish. Like, there's no O. I can't fool anybody with Kevin O'Connell.
Oh, my God.
She's like, I don't understand. And this is how much I love my mom and how much the sacrifice and they believe.
No, I get it. I get where it comes from. I get why your mom wanted to inadvertently name you the same thing that a backup quarterback, now head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, was named. Yeah.
It's incredible. And, I tried a name. All right, I'll let's get deep here. The last name was Kersey because we went with alliteration. Kevin Kersey. All right, ready for this? So my junior year at Temple, I do the TV show Temple Update, and for like literally two shows, it was Kevin Kersey, and I got crushed by my buddies.
Oh.
The director, the producer, they wouldn't stop. They wouldn't stop. And I was like, this is an embarrassment. What am I doing? And go figure. And by the way, the ones who were crushing me were American friends, not Indian friends. They were American friends.
I like to think, Kevin, that I would have crushed you too.
I hope so. Because they're the real friends of mine.
Kevin Negandhi, and I'm so glad I am saying Kevin Negandhi and not Kevin Kersey. Thank you.
I am so grateful.
Thank
Pablo
you for doing
Torre.
This. Yeah. Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. And just a quick heads up here at the end, we are about to take a little production break as we head into this holiday weekend. So enjoy the start of your summer. Enjoy this run of best of shows from 2022 that we want you to hear starting tomorrow. And yeah, I'll talk to you after Memorial Day.